Well, every human being lives moment by moment by a set of unique priorities, a set of values, a value structure, things that are most to least important in their life. And I mean, that's like a fingerprint. It's very unique to them. And whatever is really highest on that set of values, the very highest, they're spontaneously inspired to fulfill from within. It's intrinsic. They don't require motivation. They don't require external stimulus or incentives to get them to do it. Nobody in 49 years has had to motivate me to do what I love doing, which is research and teaching.
Boom, boom, sh, boom, 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 sh, boom.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast with your boys, Matt Wolf and Joe Fear.
Check it. Wiki. Hey, welcome back to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. I am your co-host, Matt Wolf. Joe is actually out on vacation right now as I record this intro. But today we have an amazing, amazing conversation with you. We're talking with Dr. John DeMartini. And Dr. DeMartini is all about how to go after your true value proposition. We're going to talk about why motivation is crap and why you need to find the one thing that just really lights you up, that drives your world, and put all of your focus on that. So we're going to be talking about that specific concept today and exactly how to execute on that concept, even if you have no idea how to figure out what you're truly passionate about, even if you have no idea how to actually pursue the things that you're passionate about. We're going to really dive into that topic with Dr. DeMartini today. So make sure you grab the notes for this episode. You can find the notes over at hustleandflowchart.com/notes. That'll be the complete action guide from this episode. All of the big takeaways from this episode are going to be in that action guide. Go to hustleandflowchart.com/notes to get that action guide. And we're going to jump over to the episode.
All right, Dr. John DeMartini, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, it's this evening for you.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, us too.
It is evening. It's midday there. It's a little bit of evening here.
Yeah. I don't want to disclose exactly where in the world you are, but you're currently in the middle of, you're in the waves right now. You're on your ship in transit to another place. I don't think we've ever done a podcast like this. It's pretty cool.
I'm on my way to Madeira from Malaga, Spain to Madeira, Portugal.
Oh, that's awesome. So cool. Yeah, the south of Spain's beautiful. I'm sure you are obviously aware of that. Portugal sounds awesome. Haven't been there. So definitely report back. Some cool pictures. Well, I mean, you're a fascinating individual just from, I don't even know where to start in the fascination, you know, side of things, because just the sheer number of books that you've devoured and distilled and through your work present, what is it, something like 30,000 plus books at this point?
Yeah, I had learning problems as a child, but once I learned how to read when I was 18, I never put a book down. I carry wherever I go pretty well.
Yeah.
I love reading.
I know there's a whole backstory there, and the traveling's a big part of it as well. You know, and you're a man on the mission, and I think that's the big thing that Matt and I were talking about as we were doing a lot of research. And got to give a shout out to Sharon Worsley as well for making this happen. Hey, Sharon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the man on a mission thing stands out the most, because I think a lot of folks walking around, people in our audience, entrepreneurs who are searching for the right direction, are searching for their mission. Mm-hmm. And of course, the values that are associated with that. So I'm kind of curious how you describe yourself as a man on a mission, because I know you have visuals and a lot of practices that you exercise daily on that.
When I was 17 years old, I was blessed to meet a very inspiring elderly gentleman at a particular evening class that he presented that reached inside me in a way that nobody else had done and awakened a yearning that I had but was suppressed to learn how to speak properly, read and learn properly, and become intelligent someday, which in my mind meant teacher. And after hearing him speak for an hour, I got tears of gratitude and I had a real vision. I guess you could call it epiphany, which had been painted and hangs in my office today, of traveling the world and teaching. I wanted to step foot in every country on the face of the earth And I wanted to share whatever I had learned that might be of value to another human being to help myself and others do something extraordinary, master their lives, empower their lives, and do something that was really contributive to the world. And so that's been my dream since I was 17. I'm 67 here in just a matter of weeks. And I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing than that. That's what I love doing the most. That's what inspires me the most.
So how would you recommend, and I know this is a lot of what you talk about in your books and stuff, but how would you recommend other people sort of uncover what their passion is, what their desire to do with their life is? Because I know the audience of this show is a lot of entrepreneurs, and we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and there is kind of this thing where a lot of people just feel like they left a job and now they're just on a different hamster wheel, right? They're going into the job every day, they're making their money, they're putting in the bank account, they're going home to their wife and kids, and then just repeating, but with no real vision, just make the money, live on. So how do people go and uncover what is that unique thing that's going to really drive them forward in life?
Well, every human being lives moment by moment by a set of unique priorities, a set of values, a value structure, things that are most to least important in their life. And I mean, that's like a fingerprint. It's very unique to them. And whatever is really highest on that set of values, the very highest, they're spontaneously inspired to fulfill from within. It's intrinsic. They don't require motivation. They don't require external stimulus or incentives to get them to do it. Mm-hmm. Nobody in 49 years has had to motivate me to do what I love doing, which is research and teaching. If you can find somebody that's ever seen me having to have that, I tell them they got a free seminar. They got free programs. Because you are automatically, intrinsically driven to do something. Now, Aristotle called that one thing, the telos, the end in mind. Napoleon Hill called it the chief aim. Ed Tolleson called it the primary objective. Others have called it the magnificent obsession, the calling, the métier, the purpose, the mission. Mm-hmm. I found that when I was very young, and I was blessed to identify that. Now, everybody has that inside them, because I've helped awaken hundreds of thousands of people with that. But they cloud the clarity of that by comparing themselves to other people and putting on people on pedestals and thinking they have something that you don't, or that they don't. And they inject the values of others, which cloud the clarity of the primary aim. And they scatter themselves into the four winds instead of focusing on their true north. Mm-hmm. And that yearning, that spontaneity, their life still demonstrates, but they're not honoring it because they keep comparing themselves to what they think they should do, ought to do, supposed to do, got to do, have to do, must do, need to do. They're injecting the imperatives of other people instead of honoring the magnificence of who they are. But it's there because every decision we make, every perception we make, every action we take is an expression of what we value most. And when we fill our day with the highest priority action that inspires us most, that makes the biggest difference, the greatest sustainable, fair exchange, equitable exchange of service, we've captured it. We found it. And if we do that, we don't need motivation. I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm an educator awakening people to what inspires them intrinsically from within. Because if they access that, they don't require motivation. Motivation is a symptom, never a solution for a human being. So I'm a firm believer of first identifying your hierarchy of values and then giving yourself permission to pursue what's highest. The one thing, as Gary Keller says, and mastering the art of engaging the rest of the world through delegation the actions that you want to release that are lower, they devalue you and distract you, so you can get on to doing the thing that you're called to do. So your life is an inspiration and an exemplification of what's possible as a human being. Instead of sitting there weighing yourself down, holding on to things because you think you should or ought to, supposed to be doing things. So giving yourself permission to shine, not shrink, to radiate, not gravitate, to broaden your space and time horizon instead of shrink them, is your natural destiny waiting to surface. And all you have to do is look honestly at what your life demonstrates you're spontaneously inspired by. You look carefully about what you fill your space with, because that which is in your innermost intimate and personal space is something valuable to you. Look at what that is. What do you want to spend your time on? You make time, find time, spend time on things that are valuable to you. What is it that energizes you? Because you have more energy at the end of the day than when you start, when you're doing what's highest. The day disappears. You become present, almost a timeless mind, ageless body state. You look at what you spend your money on. You make money, find money, make money and spend money on things that are really valuable to you. You look at where you're organized, because whatever's highest on your value is where you bring order to. You look at what you're disciplined spontaneously on, that nobody has to motivate you or remind you to do. You look at what you think about, what you visualize, and what you internally dialogue to yourself about how you would love your life to be, that shows true evidence of coming true, momentum building, an escalation of achievement. You look at what you keep conversing with other people about, because you keep wanting to bring the conversation to what's highest on your value, because your innermost dominant thought represents your highest value. And you want to think about it and talk about it. You look at what inspires you and brings tears of inspiration, and what's common to the people who inspire you. You look at what the persistent, consistent goals that you've targeted, that you have achieved and are making progress on daily, and nothing stops you from nothing interferes with that. And you look at what you spontaneously want to learn and read about, and study about, and watch on YouTubes and videos and attend. And if you look at those, there's a pattern. And that pattern is evident if you're honest and you really soul search. And when you do, and you give yourself permission to pursue that, you now have the synchronicities, the people, places, things, ideas, and events in your life start to synchronize to help you, reward you, because authenticity, your identity revolves around what you value most. And the authenticity of that expression is rewarded by every aspect of your life. Your physiology, psychology, sociology, even theology rewards anybody who's authentic, because they're doing what they love, and it's a rewarding of the most effective and efficient way of living life. So there's evidence revealed in every human being of what that is, but it may not match what they think it should be, and that's where they get blocked.
It's all the shoulds out there and the, oh, I should do that, or I have to do this. Those are all indications that you're not living to the true inner you, it sounds like.
That's exactly it. Those are imperative languages that hold you back from your magnificent intrinsic expression of what you'd love to do, that that's your calling in life.
So if people figure out what their ideal purpose is and the stuff that they're just energized by and the stuff that they talk about endlessly when they're around other people and they really sort of figure that out, what if that is not necessarily aligned with, you know, income? You know, you've got to pay the bills, maybe you've got expenses, you figure out what your true passion is, but the true passion you want to go for won't pay the bills. How do you sort of rectify that?
If the vacation and vocation aren't the same, you've got a schizophrenic life and you have a Monday morning blues, a Wednesday hump days, a thank God it's Fridays and a week friggin' end. So I'm a firm believer in asking a different question. What is that I would absolutely love to do in life? How do I get handsomely and beautifully paid to do it? What are the highest priority action steps I can do today to make one step closer to that objective? What obstacles might I run into? How do I solve in advance? What worked, what didn't work today? How do I do it more effectively and efficiently tomorrow? And how did whatever happen today, whatever it may be, supportive or challenging, how is it helping me fulfill my mission? The quality of your life is based on the quality of the questions you ask. If you ask questions on how can I afford to do what I love, but how can I get unbelievably wealthy doing what I love? I don't know if you know about this story, but I have a woman who wanted to spend time with their dog. And we ended up turning that into a $25 million net worth.
Ooh, we'd love to hear that story.
We have a lady that basically came to a program that I do called the Breakthrough Experience, which is about helping people break through those exact limitations. And I asked her, what is it you'd absolutely love to do in life? And she said, well, she put on the spot. She hesitated. I said, no, what is it absolutely you love doing? What do you do spontaneously every day? She says, well, I play with my dog. Great. You know, how could you get handsomely and beautifully paid with, you know, to be with your dog? And she looked at me with a blank stare and she goes, I have no idea. I don't know. I said, how can you get handsomely and beautifully paid? Be accountable to answer the question. How can you get handsomely and beautifully paid? People will pay when you fulfill some value in their life. How could you make your dog fill a value in people's lives? Stop and think about it. And she goes, he's cute. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll pay for pictures. And this is at a time when iPhones weren't existing. Right. So I said, good. Now, what are the highest priority action steps you can take right now to make that happen? To get paid to be with your dog? And she thought, I can walk him where most people are. I can, when they ask me for a picture, which they do, I can charge for it. I've never done that. And she started coming up with actions. I write them down. Because if you take an action step every single day towards something that is profoundly important to you, you blow your mind what can happen once you build momentum. Little piggy banks become piggy banks. Yeah. So I went through all those questions that I mentioned. And she left the seminar on a Sunday evening. And on a Monday evening, she decided to take her dog for a walk. And she was in New York, walked down the Avenue of the Philosophers Avenue, I think it's called, where there's trees and little park benches, and it goes up to a fountain, and it goes where there's a little lake by the boathouse in New York, in Central Park. And when she walked up there, she walked around with her dog. And somebody, like usual, asked if they could take a picture, you know. And those days you had little cameras you took pictures with. Mm-hmm. And she said, certainly, but that will be $5. And I think she said that was a trepidative moment. She felt uncomfortable doing it. She felt mean.
Sure.
And somebody pulled out a $5 bill and she got paid for the $5. And she walked back with the dog that night and she goes, you know, you paid for your food today. Pretty good.
Right.
So once you take actions that are high priority, that are meaningful, the blood glucose and oxygen goes into the forebrain, activates the executive center where creative ideas start surfacing. Inspired vision starts emerging, the desire to spontaneously act, and self-governance, so you're less distracted. So she went into the closet, got on the floor, sat in front of the closet, rummaged through some stuff, and found some red elastic banded material and a little black banded strips. And she cut those pieces and went and sewed up a little, I guess you could call it a tube, of material that fit between his arms and legs, red. And then she ended up getting a black strap that she cut, and she found some sunglasses, and she tied them to the edges, and she practiced him walking on his hind legs with this red tube on and the sunglasses to increase the probability that people want a picture. Well, the next day she went into the park, and this park's always full of people. So she goes in the park, and five people come up and ask for a picture. Not all of them paid for it, but she made $15. Two of them didn't want to pay. Three paid. $15. She decided to then make a card that she was the agent of this and he's a model, just for fun, you know, just for a laugh. And she started making more elaborate outfits. And if you go on to the website, or not a website, but look up her name, you'll find actually pictures of her and the dog with all these outfits. So she made a Pope's outfit. She made a turkey outfit. She made a tuxedo. She made a Hugh Hefner designed outfit, because she knew how to create outfits, I guess, and put this dog in these different outfits. And sometimes she'd carry them. Sometimes she'd walk them. Sometimes she'd walk them on things with sunglasses, you know, with and attach a cigar to it. I mean, she really went elaborate with this thing. And it went up to $125 that she could collect in an hour. She could collect, I mean, people were wanting to take pictures left and right, and she had formal, card for the dog, so he's now becoming famous. And a guy comes up to her and is laughing, just laughing. He says, that's cool. That is cool. He says, I'm involved in advertising. I really think I could use your dog actually in a commercial. The guy sat and offered her an opportunity to be the Milk-Bone Dog Biscuit mascot, Eli.
Wow.
That was $2.2 million she made out of that.
Wow.
That went on for a long time. She got two other major ones. So she had three major brands that she got to participate in. Then on top of that, she got three television shows, Moms and Dogs, that came about. This is in New York. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, the dog died, and she got another dog to replace it, looked identical. And that one died 7 years later and carried this thing 21 years.
Wow.
This dog walked the Globe Awards, the Academy Awards. This dog showed up at everything. Hollywood, New York, you name it. About 6 years ago, I got an email from her. About every 3 months, she'd send me an email showing me the progress she'd make from this silly question that I asked her. And she finally sent me a thing. She says, after 21 years of making this a life, my net worth is $25 million. I've got a penthouse that's in his name. And he's passed on now. I'm not going to carry it on. And I met a man. Hmm. When you got a dog that makes you $25 million, you don't need a man. Because you got an unconditional lover that doesn't argue with you. But she ended up making a fortune out of it. And she now does a charity thing and helps people in the fine arts and the arts industry. But she took a silly set of questions and turned it into a gold mine. Now, I'm not telling you to go find a dog to do that. But I'm absolutely certain that whatever you're inspired to do fits into a magnificent design of serving people. You haven't thought creatively on how you can use it. You haven't looked at what the searches are out there on the search engines to find out what people are needing. You haven't figured out a way of translating and articulating in a sales, marketing, and communications set of languages how what this thing you have can serve that. And that may take skills, but if you really, really want to get up in the morning and can't wait to go to be in service to people, and you find people can't wait to get that service, you've got a gold mine sitting there. And I've taken people from almost every manageable dream and made them make cash out of it. Now, yes, there are some areas that, if you're an IT genius, you can go out and make software or whatever. You can make, semiconductors and make billions. Sure. But I believe that if you find something that's deeply meaning, money with meaning leads to humanitarian philanthropy. Mm-hmm. But money without meaning leads to debauchery. And people go and make money just to make money to fill in needs, but they don't do something that they can't wait to get up in the morning and do inspiring. They have Monday morning blues, Wednesday hump days, and they're trying to escape with the amygdala response, trying to avoid predator and seek prey because life's a predator to them. So they're going out looking for immediate gratification, and then they go and spend their money on immediate gratifications and other people's brands at overpriced instead of building a massive brand around something they dream about. So I'm a firm believer in giving yourself permission to shine, not shrink, and do something out of the ordinary. Otherwise, you're going to fit in and not stand out, and you can't make a difference fitting in.
And that's what I've heard you say before in a variety of places is, the whole fitting in. And, there's a whole evolution process to us with a drive to fit into the group. But it's so difficult and rare to sidestep the group and think a little, within ourselves. And would you say that a lot of confusion, maybe even depression, comes from thinking of the outside influences and not figuring out like how that jives? It's almost like this anxiety happens or this reaction inside of us.
It's essential that it does. It's not a mistake. It's not a weakness. It's not a flaw in you. It's a gift because it's letting you know you're not being authentic. It's giving you feedback that you're trying to subordinate to outer authorities.
Yeah.
Ralph Waldo Emerson said, envy is ignorance and imitation is suicide. And then even Albert Einstein said, my contempt for authority has made me one. And Freud said, whenever you inject the values of others, you create a superego that becomes the masochist to your own dreams. So I'm a firm believer of not comparing yourself to other people, but comparing your daily actions to what you value most and seeing how congruent you can be with your priorities and your actions in life. And that will require that you delegate lower priority things. You can liberate yourself to do the things that really are deeply meaningful to you that serve in an equitable and in a sustainable fair exchange manner with human beings. There's no lack of money because there's no lack of human beings that want to fulfill needs. You just got to care enough about humanity to find out what their needs are and find a way of what you want to do and what that niche is that fills needs.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. It's endless possibilities once you tap into it and understand yourself and what other people need of how you can deliver that value. Now, you said something earlier about lighting up the front of your brain, and I've heard you reference this as well, is when you believe in something so big and you have this mission, you have your values kind of in place, when you light up the front of your brain, something different happens, you know, than the same old. But you have this drive that almost, it makes you a little bit unshakable, it seems like. Can you describe how we can kind of get to that process?
You are unshakable. You are stable. The way the brain is set up, it has a desire center in the amygdala that's sometimes called the desire center, which wants to avoid pain and seek pleasure, avoid predator, to seek prey, avoid challenge and seek, you know, support. Mm-hmm. And then it has an executive center that embraces pain and pleasure in the pursuit of a purpose, something deeply meaningful. The telos is the path of purpose. The study of it is called teleology, the study of meaning and purpose. The second you identify what's really most important to you, that you spontaneously keep wanting to do, and structure your life according to that and live by the highest priority. Literally, the forebrain lights up under functional MRIs. And the forebrain is the frontal lobe and the prefrontal cortex area, which is also attached to the parietal regions. And this is what we call the conscious mind, the reasoning mind. Freud called it the real true ego expression. And the moment we do, it sends fibers back into what they call the visual associative areas in the occiput, which allows you the maximum associations that you can make visually. And the moment you're living congruently, you automatically see a vision. That's why in biblical language, they said those with a vision flourish and those without a vision perish. The amygdala doesn't have access to those areas. It has secondary access to the genetic body, and it goes all the way back into the primary cortex for just light and dark visual contrast, but it doesn't have the visual associations. What's interesting is it also has an area for strategic planning, because the pulvinar nuclei and the thalamus, which is just underneath it in the diencephalon, filters all sensory experiences up before it goes into the cortex. And it has access to that and maximizes that, because whatever's highest on your value, you maximize through a selected biased attention to filter out infinity to get the information that's most synchronous to what you're up to, what your dream is. And so you now have the max amount of information to make the most strategic decision processes. And it is also connected to the associative motor cortex on the side, the little homunculus area of the side that Penfield described. And it activates that area and creates a spontaneous action. It's not hesitant. Whatever's low on your value, you procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate on. And you're lacking information. You have attention deficit disorder, retention deficit disorder, and intention deficit disorder. But not in your highest value, not in the forebrain. That's where you have attention surplus order. And there you go through and you make decisions quick and you act on them and you spontaneously act. And spontaneous action that's intrinsic far exceeds accomplishment. And also when you're pursuing that, you're more objective, you're more neutral. You're not subjectively biased where you're really polarized and emotional. So now you're in your reasoning center instead of your emotional center, the executive center instead of the desire center. And that is where you actually spontaneously act with objectivity. You're poised and present and more resilient and adaptable. And you're not, and it also sends signals down into the amygdala to calm and mitigate that with glutamate and GABA, the facilitator inhibitory neuron transmitters. And it goes down and it calms down the distractions, the impulses and instincts, the infatuation, resentments that distract people from a mission. And it lights up that forebrain and electrifies it and allows it to master life. So yeah, using the forebrain, you're living with foresight, you're mitigating risks, and you're seeing and strategically planning, and you're ready to go to Mars and handling anything that comes your way. If not, you're in your amygdala or in your hindbrain, and you're living by trial and error and finding out, oop, that didn't work, that doesn't work, try this. and it's inefficient. And anything that maximizes efficiency and effectiveness and the productivity of service to the world automatically rises to the top. So yeah, living in your highest value and your forebrain gives you a definite competitive advantage in the game of achievement and fulfillment and mastery of life. And every time you do that, your space and time horizons grow. And when you do, the second your space and time horizons get bigger than the world and bigger than your life, you create immortal legacies. And therefore you are unstoppable and you leave a mark on the planet. And that's how you make a difference, being authentic to yourself, not trying to fit in, cloud the clarity of all that, and then live in mediocrity, trying to go against what your own calling is inside and have a brake on all the time, not the gas pedal accelerating. So yeah, we have the capacity to do something extraordinary if we actually don't get caught in the ordinary. And the ordinary is, you might say, the mass consciousness instead of the master consciousness.
John, you have like, you put this kind of creepy childlike smile on my face because you described something so deep that I didn't understand half of the terminology you use, but I'll look it up. But the thing I took away from is, you know, if we live in our emotions, which is what the hindbrain is, you know, that can detract us. That's the outside influences, and we're not true to our mission. And that's not where we can drive, and, you know, things distract us. We're not in our flow state. But when we light that front piece up, it's like the emotions are out the window because they're taken care of by, they're delegated. You're not focused on them. They're handled. They're fine. But you have, yeah, the drive, you know, we all have this drive and this focus where it's like, yeah, let's go to Mars. I don't care what you're saying or what, you know, look, we're doing this. This is my mission and I believe it. And that's all that matters.
I was at the planetarium in Houston, Texas in March, April. Uh-huh. And my girlfriend had flown in from Istanbul and we were just walking at the park and the zoo and the planetarium. And I sat down on a bench there that's a kind of a noted bench. In the 1940s, a gentleman sat on a bluff there. There was no planetarium there, just a bluff overlooking a swamp with sugarcane fields and oil derricks in a swampy area, a bayou area. And the man looked out from that little bluff that kind of dropped down a number of feet. And he said, I see one of the greatest medical centers in the world. He saw it in a dream and a vision. He started to tell people what he saw. They thought he was crazy. That's swampland. Nobody wants it. It's filled with oil. There's oil derricks. They've dredged it out. They planted sugarcane. They got oil derricks sitting on these mounds because it's just swamp. It's useless land. He said, no, it's the greatest medical center in the world. And they thought he was crazy. His name was Herman, Dr. Herman. He finally told another guy, Dr. Rice, about it. And he captured the vision. He says, yes, I can see a university there. They got a banker. And slowly but surely, he built up a team. You know, Margaret Mead said, never underestimate the significance of a small group of people for making a difference in the world. It's the only thing that ever did. One visionary with a small group of people that build momentum, that are unstoppable, change the world. So he saw that. He gathered some people involved, started building momentum, and was able to buy dirt cheap land and built the first hospital there. Wow. I was born in that hospital.
Wow.
1954. Now, out there was nothing but just this swampy land and some a couple trees here and there, and, you know, wasn't anything spectacular. A lot of sandy, loamy soil, sugarcane. Today, I believe there's 200 high-rise medical complex systems there now. It's the largest medical center in the world. Wow. One man with a vision that is clear can overpower millions that are unclear. An idea whose time has come, within the tiny seed lies a mighty oak. And then the seed of pure awareness, when you're actually living congruently, you see clarity of vision. And clarity of vision is like a magnifying glass that takes sunlight and puts it on fire. And I think that's unstoppable. And so he built that and seeded that and built momentum. There's another friend of mine, Maha Sinathambi, who came from Malaysia, And he saw in the middle of nowhere, inland from Brisbane, Australia, a new city. They thought, it's just rolling hills. It means nothing. It's cheap land. Nobody lives there. Well, he's on his way to having 50,000 people near. And his dream by 2050 is having the one of the largest cities in Australia, and it's growing. Wow. And he took the best of the best of the best of the best of the greatest ideas on designing cities from around the world, and he's doing it. He's one of the wealthiest men in the country today. Came from poverty, from Malaysia. But he saw vision. Many times I got to tour with him and lecture on him in and out of Australia. And I share with him about Dr. Herman. And so he investigated, and I got the story for him, and he ended up doing the same thing. So individuals like that, or Elon Musk, that have dreams and visions that other people can't fathom because it's outside their space and time horizons, and they would procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate, and they would imagine it would be overwhelming, and they wouldn't have the discipline to do it. Somebody who's congruent has the discipline to do it. They don't see it as work. They see it as a mission. I don't see my work as work. People think it would come to me and say, well, you know, I couldn't imagine how many hours you put into it. I couldn't do that. I said, that's because you're not doing what you love. You don't notice time. As Deepak says, you're in a timeless mind, ageless body when you're doing something you really love. And Bill Pollack, Drake International, I was having dinner with him in a French restaurant across from the Four Seasons in Sydney, Australia one night. And he said, you know, in 1951, when I opened up in Toronto, my little, first little thing I called Drake, which is basically a temporary service for women typing. That was the last day I ever worked in my life because I feel like I'm doing something I love so much. And he would do 18 hours a day, wouldn't even think about it. And he's 90s today and still cranking. So I'm a firm believer that, and I was sitting here just the other night on the ship talking with one of the wealthier billionaires on the planet. And it's interesting. He's sitting there giving money away to philanthropy, hundreds of millions of dollars regularly. And he's inspired by that. And it's just inspiring to see a man who's a genius. He has 4,000 patents and he's a genius. And he's basically humanitarian focused, opening up hospitals and opening up educational centers and doing amazing things. And I find that people who capture that wake up their genius. And he was a, like me, dyslexic and a child high school dropout and when he started, but he found his mission. And people, you know, when they access that, they don't need motivation anymore. That's what I love doing. I love helping people access that. Because then they don't have to go looking for a stimulus. They are the stimulus.
Yeah.
And so I believe every entrepreneur has it inside them. And when you wake it up, you become unstoppable.
It's amazing.
Unstoppable.
Yeah.
So what advice would you have for people that, you know, maybe there's some external factors that they feel are holding them back from going for their mission, right? Maybe they're in a job that's paying the bills and they're married and they've got kids, or maybe they have family members who aren't, totally on board with this mission. Mm-hmm. How would you go about maybe inspiring the people in your inner circles to get on this mission with you?
Everybody has a set of values. Talk about your vision in terms of helping them fulfill their values. When you help other people get what they want to get in life, you get what you want to get in life. There's no such thing as a labeled difficult person. There's just an individual that you don't know how to communicate with because you didn't care enough to find out what is valuable to them. Find out what's valuable to them, articulate it in that value, and then they'll be part of your team. Or if you don't want to take that time, which is actually the most efficient, you can just go out there and do something extraordinary. And when they see you starting to build momentum on it, I guarantee you they will swap and follow you. When I was in professional school many years ago, 40 something years ago, I got laughed at. I got ridiculed. I got my tire slit. I got everything else because I had the top grade. I got hundreds, which meant there was no curves. And that threw everybody off. And so finally they placed me out of the class and I got to teach the class. So the very people that didn't like me had to now listen to me.
That's great.
And at first they didn't like me. They literally did not like me because I was messing them up because they were comparing themselves instead of focusing on what they're here to learn. But later on, they were in my seminars. and we're friends. So at first you're going to be ridiculed. Then you're going to be violently opposed until you're self-evident. And all that is a test to find out if you're really committed to that aim. And if you are, and it's really highest on your value, you will embrace that test. When the why is big enough, all those hows take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So don't use people as excuses. Don't create a dissociated causality where the outside world is the cause of your feelings and experiences. Those aren't true. Ask yourself, how is their challenge and their criticism helping you fulfill your dream? How are their doubts and uncertainties about you testing you and making sure you're clear? They're helping you make sure you put a plan that's unbeatable and unstoppable and polished and clean. Because if you can solve their doubts, nothing will stop you. So use them on the way, not in the way. One of the greatest questions you can ask yourself, how is whatever's happening to me, supportive or challenging, helping me fulfill my mission? Because you're going to have a need for both support and challenge in life. You're not going to get support without challenge. You have to have both. If you had nothing but support, you'd puff yourself up into pride and you'd be inauthentic, exaggerating yourself with goals that are too big that humble you. And if you go through and you get support, you stay juvenilely dependent, right, that way. But it's the challengers that make you really determined. It's the challengers that make you refine. It's pursuing challenges that inspire you that makes genius. And embracing challenge along the way. You know, there's a great video with Elon Musk that they're interviewing from 60 Minutes. The white-haired gentleman is interviewing, and he says, you know, you've had three failures, billions of dollars of blow-ups and explosions. You know, have you ever had a moment where you just said, oh, I want to just toss the towel and say, that's it? And he said a famous quote that's been now really impactful. He says, I don't ever give up. I'd have to be incapacitated. I'm a man on a mission to Mars. And when the why is big enough, and bigger than the obstacles turn into opportunities. So how all you've been doing is being tested on how authentic you are. Because if you're authentic, your why will be big enough. If you're not authentic, you'll come up with excuses and they will affect you. Because once you have their opinions matter more than your own dream, you're going to be a follower of a culture, not a builder of a culture. And it's the pursuit of challenges that inspire you that transcend the having to track challenges that don't. Because once you build momentum, if you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire, your day fills up with low priority distractions that don't. But the second you fill your day with inspiring actions, you don't have time to be distracted by other things. And they all become trivial instead of something that's meaningful. So, I've had lots of people laugh at me. I got one more story. Can I share this story?
Please.
I was 18 years old. And I was being driven carpooling with a guy to go to this college I was going to. And this guy was an engineer and wanted to build magnetic trains. This is in 1973. And I knew I wanted to travel the world and teach. I knew that. And study philosophy and healing and many things. And we were driving there. And one day, a friend of his joined on the little carpool. And he was a wealthy kid that was kind of taken care of and didn't really have a kind of floundered because he assumed that he was going to have money and he wasn't really driven inside, just kind of partying. And he was sitting in the back seat and we were talking about it. And I asked my buddy to tell him about his magnetic trains. And then he asked me, he said, tell him about your dream about teaching. And the guy was in the back seat. He goes, that's crazy. You guys come from a small town. Who do you think you are? You're not... You know, you don't have what it takes. You're going to probably work in a cotton gin. Come on. And you don't even know how to read very well, John. Come on. These are fantasies. And he laughed and he ridiculed. And we didn't really necessarily call him the next time to go to carpool. And this year, probably 4 months ago, that man came on to one of my webinars. And afterwards he typed in this one statement. You friggin' did it, man. So if you're not being crucified, you're probably not on purpose. And the guy that did the magnetic trains is building magnetic trains today.
Wow. This is where it's so rare to live a mission, huh? I mean, it's said so often by so many people, live the mission, but you've done it. A few have also done it, but it's not a common thing that people actually live it and you know, dedicate your entire life. And I know that becomes a legacy that extends way beyond you. And you have that ripple effect. Every visionary, anyone living their mission, does.
The Roman poet and politician Seneca said, "You measure an individual by their most distant ends. The magnitude of space and time within your innermost dominant thought determines the level of conscious evolution you've attained." So the greater the cause, the greater the life. Mm-hmm. The greater the challenges that you go to dedicate your life to solving, the greater the fulfillment in life, the greater the genius you awaken. So if you're an entrepreneur, don't get caught in the trivia. Capture a vision and mission of massive service, of doing something that means so much to you that there's nothing on the planet that can interfere with it. Quit trying to memorize trivial little gimmicks and give yourself permission to really focus on what's really the calling.
Absolutely.
You won't be stopped if you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And like us entrepreneurs, and I know a lot of people listening to this, we, I think, sort of self-sabotage by seeking validation for our ideas. I mean, if you find your mission and you know this is the thing that you want to do, what we've even done in the past when we thought we found our mission, when we thought this is what we should be doing, is we'll go and we'll ask 7 different people, what do you think of this idea? Should I pursue it? What are your thoughts based on your experiences? Should I go down this path? And if enough people go, I don't know, then we just throw the mission out the window. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs tend to sort of self-sabotage through seeking validation, even if it is something that in their hearts they feel is a true calling.
But the thing is you said what we should do. Mm-hmm. Don't ever ask that. Mm-hmm. Look inside your heart. You want to be an unborrowed visionary, not a borrowed visionary. Hmm. I said since I was 20 that I create original ideas that serve humanity. I create original ideas that serve humanity. You're not going to give yourself permission to create original ideas if you subordinate to any human being on earth. What you do is you take the most powerful people on the planet, make a list of them, identify the specific trait, actions, or inactions that you perceive in them, that they display or demonstrate, that you admire most. And then realize nothing's missing in you. At the level of the essence of your soul, nothing's missing. At the level of the existence of your senses, things appear to be missing because you're too humble or too proud to admit what you see in others inside you. And that's a deflective awareness instead of pure reflective awareness, which leads to love and intimacy of life. But if you go in there and ask yourself, where and when do I display and demonstrate these behaviors? I guarantee you, if you look honestly, you will find that you have nothing missing in you. You have everything you see in them. It's just in a different form according to your values. But you're going to think it should be in their values. And that's where you end up thinking you're sabotaging. The sabotage isn't sabotage. The sabotage is a feedback mechanism, a homeostatic feedback mechanism to your authenticity to make sure you don't go off and try to be somebody you're not. Because if you try to be second at being somebody else instead of first being you, you're not going to leave your mark on the world.
No one's broken. You're always full. You have everything. And that hits home with me. That's something that I've been told before, and you've said it again here. And John, thank you. Thank you. This has been incredible. And I know we got to get you out of here, but this is incredible. The work you've done. I mean, I know we've only scratched the surface of what you put out there, and it's immense. Tell us where us, you know, we and everyone else watching, listening can go dive in.
Well, if they want to experience something to do with me, then they just simply go to drdmartini.com.
You got it all.
And there is media, and there's YouTubes, and there's thousands of articles and television and radio and podcast interviews and things filled with educational material for them. And there's a value determination process that's free and private that I would encourage people to take advantage of. Just go on there and look for the value determination process, DeMartini value determination process, and take 30 minutes of your life and go through it, answer honestly. And then do it again. And do it again, just to make sure you're honest with yourself. And then give yourself permission to go after what's priority and learn how to delegate the rest. Unless you delegate lower priority things and stick to higher priority things, don't expect an inspired life. That's it. DrDMartini.com. That's where they can go.
I love it. You were the master at delegation, and thank you for sharing your wisdom, because it's going to land with many here on the show and far beyond, I know. And you're doing You're doing the great work. You're doing your work, of course. So thank you. And I hope we can chat again later.
I look forward to it. Thank you for this interview, and may your outreach, bless a lot of people. They may touch their lives, because you know that your fulfillment is an expression of their fulfillment. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. Appreciate it.
You got that.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Dr. John DeMartini. That was an amazing episode, and I really, really love everything that he shared. Joe and I had some great insights, and to be honest, right after we recorded that interview, Joe and I went into our other office space over here and probably had a two-hour conversation about the content that we just talked with Dr. John DeMartini about. We talked about how to really find what drives us, how to cut out the stuff that doesn't drive us, why motivation is BS, all of the interesting conversations, all of the stories that Dr. John DeMartini just shared with us. Joe and I just had an extended conversation about that. Hopefully we'll be getting Dr. DeMartini back on the show one day, because we have so much more we want to talk about. In fact, I got through about half of my notes of questions that we wanted to chat with him. So thanks so much for sticking around for that interview. I know you enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. There's so much gold in that. So make sure you get the notes from it. If you go to hustleandflowchart.com/notes, you can get the complete action guide for this episode. So everything we talked about, all of the processes he broke down, probably some of the stories, we really, really break it all down in a Cliff's Notes kind of fashion over inside of our action guides. So you can get the action guides over at hustleandflowchart.com/notes. They're completely free. Just go grab them over there and you'll get a nice little written recap of what we talked about. Also, this episode is sponsored once again by Easy Webinar. If you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, they are hooking you up with a discount for being a Hustle and Flowchart listener. So go to easywebinar.com/hustle to do all of your live webinars, all of your automated webinars, all of your hybrid webinars, have it build your webinar landing pages for you, track all of your analytics for your webinars for you, track all of the registrants from the webinars for it. Does everything webinars. Anything you're going to want to do with webinars, you're going to want Easy Webinar to do them. So go to easywebinar.com/hustle. They're hooking you up. And also, I know you know somebody that would find a lot of value from this episode. Share this episode with them. Tell others. If you're watching this on YouTube, share the link to the YouTube video. If you're listening on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere like that, share the link to this episode. We want to make sure that as many people as possible get the value that are contained in episodes like this. So once again, thanks so much for tuning in today, and we'll see you guys on the next episode of Hustle and Flowchart. See you later.